The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on this Wednesday. 9 states and 60 sticks. Yay for us. I appreciate the blessing. Been talking college football on this network for 10 years, and what a blessing. Again, I just thank you all for making that possible. There are a couple of items that I want to know about when it comes to a spring practice. College football spring practice, two things. Is it open? Like, can I go? Can I see some things? Or do I have to wait afterwards and then press play and record at the same time on the Marantz? And, you know, can I go? Is it open? And then the other thing, is there going to be some good on good? And y'all know what that is. And it can be a scrimmage. An actual scrimmage is awesome. Give me 100 plays out there. But it can just be a, quote, just a practice. Louisville is having 6 open practices. And when I say open, I don't mean to me because I've got a hat and it says media on a little piece of paper in the, you know, in the band. Like, whoever's just walking along, you want to go watch the Cardinals practice? You can come in as well. They've had 5 of them so far. They play again on Friday night. I'm going to welcome everybody in, and it's a neat approach, and maybe you get to pick some stuff up. Want to welcome on from right now, 93.9 The Ville, yonder in Louisville it is, Mark Ennis. Mark, welcome back, buddy. How you doing?
Doing great. It's good to talk to you. Love this time of year around here.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Talk open practice. That's neat. There are places in the SEC with gun towers around the practice field. Talk about open practice. It's fans too, isn't it?
Oh, it most certainly is, and they show out for them as well. I think this is Jeff staying connected to the city that this is. You know, I don't think he's paranoid about this place because this is home for him. And I think he trusts fans, and it has been a really enjoyable kind of connecting experience to get to see some of these guys in action here throughout the spring. It's been nice. With this much turnover, I think we'd be dying if we didn't get to see some of these guys in spring practice before the spring game, and now we're getting to.
All right, so you and I have talked about this before. Last year I saw the transfer and where he'd been before. I was like, well, he's boys with the head coach. I get what this is. Tyler Shuck's different. He's a guy that I've heard, if he could have stayed healthy – and for folks listening, he has not stayed healthy, not even close. But yeah, if he had stayed healthy, like, he's NFL, he's Sunday all the way. Tell me what you've seen from Tyler Shuck.
Yeah, I see at least the bones of what people are talking about when they say those things right there. He is really big. He is mature. You know, he looks like a grown adult man. You know, he just got married over the weekend. You know, and that's what they want out of him. And he's got a big arm. He's picking up the offense. You know, I think the Jack Plummer last year, they wanted him to help them just sort of fast forward things in terms of learning the offense and such. And he really, I think by the end of the year, we came to see Jack Plummer as like a 0.0 war guy. He didn't hurt you, but they didn't win a lot of games because of him either. And I think if Tyler has good injury luck this year, they're hoping and thinking that they've got somebody who can positively help them win games and really help the offense take a step that it never took last year. The explosive passing game stuff that we think about with Jeff Fromm really never emerged last year, and they want that this year, and he's a part of that for sure.
All right, so talk running back depth chart, because that's how they got to their 10 wins last year. Talk depth chart at running back, and there was a little bit of weirdness, at least to people outside of Louisville, when, wait a minute, the kid just showed up in January, and now he's already leaving. Just talk transactions as well as who's there and who may carry the rock.
Yeah, this was a big surprise, I think, to everybody. One of the transfers everyone, I think, was most excited about it was Penny Boone coming in from Toledo. He was the MAC Offensive Player of the Year. Pretty unique, I think, physically, you know, a tiny bowling ball of a guy, but a really powerful runner. And they don't have anybody like him. And I think people were really excited about what he might be able to do in this offense after what Isaac Garrido and Jawar Jordan did a year ago. And look, through spring, had not heard that he was like the worst or anything, but they also brought in Don Chaney Jr. from Miami. They bring back Maurice Turner, and they signed two freshman running backs last year that they also like too. And Penny Boone wasn't running with the ones. And this is, Chuck, this is something that's happening all over the place. I go somewhere, I go through spring. I don't like how it feels at the end here of spring, and I'm not committing to it, and I'm out of here again. I think Kentucky just had a receiver that came in from A&M, did the same thing. This is just the game that we're playing now, unfortunately. And they still like their depth, but I'm not going to sugarcoat it. They don't have anybody that was like Penny Boone on the roster now, and that's a loss. It stinks.
Talking about the transfers, and if there are names from bigger programs, especially guys that had moments, we're like, oh, that should translate, and you're right, it doesn't always translate. Ja'Cory Brooks, what's the early returns?
Look, they love him. And you know, this happened with two guys this year for me. When he signed with Louisville, I had people reach out. Tyler Shuff, people at Texas Tech are like, you're going to love this kid. And I had people around the collective at Alabama like, they love Ja'Cory Brooks at Alabama. He hasn't had injury luck either. If you can keep him on the field, he can be a star. But it's a big if. And I think that they have taken their time with him to make sure that he's 100% by fall. But I think you'll see Louisville, they would like one more impactful guy at wide receiver still. Opposite him. They really love Colin Lacey in the slot. He came from South Alabama. Is a really, really dangerous player. And they like Ja'Cory Brooks, but they would love one more guy. Because Ja'Cory's still got a little bit of a ways to go to be totally healthy.
Tyler Barron, I saw that name, and I don't know why. Tyler Barron, he's leaving Tennessee. He's going to Louisville. And I said, really? I was like, that's a get. What's the thought? What's the feel right now?
Still settling in. You know, I think not necessarily setting the world on fire, but the defense overall in spring, this sounds so odd to be saying this, but the defense overall so far, by all reports and by the folks that I've talked to, Louisville's defense has had a much better spring than the offense. And they bring back more experienced guys than the offense does, who's breaking in new receivers and a new quarterback again. But on defense kind of overall, they're very excited about what they've got. And Tyler Barron is part of that. They need an edge guy opposite Ashton Galati. To sort of make them a holistic defense. And they never totally found that guy a year ago, and they're hoping that Tyler Barron's one of those guys that can be that this year.
Yeah, and I mean, when it's a little something for everybody in the transfer portal because there's good players everywhere, and the fact that the Ivy League doesn't allow graduates, you see that Harvard sends a lineman to Louisville, you're like, what? And you're like, well, maybe the guy can play. But he just literally can't keep playing where he was. All right, bounce as far back as you can, the secondary. There's some turnover there, boy. How's it going to turn out?
They're actually really excited. Jarvis Brownlee is a big loss, and they would have loved to have had him back, but they got – two enormous boosts on defense this year by guys who are already here. Quincy Riley, I think a lot of people really thought he was perhaps a better pro prospect than Jarvis Brownlee, and Quincy Riley opted to come back. And then Ashton Galati up front opting to come back really gives them a lot to work with. And they're, I think, really most excited about MJ Griffin, who was going to be the starting safety, who really finished 2 years ago as one of the best players in the secondary, tore his ACL right before the season last year. And they sort of scramble to cover for that all season. They're thrilled with where he is now. And I think to have him back full speed and have Quincy Riley back, I think they're going to be a lot more pressure, high-pressure defense, because they think they can cover this year.
Have Louisville fans kind of gotten their legs in the reality of the basketball team is, and I guess the program right now is where it is, and football is where it is? Like, this is, if you have identity, if you're 40, 45, 50 or older as a Louisville athletics fan, I mean, this is weird times.
You're 100% right about that. And we had a lot of discussions this year about having almost 60,000 people at games, which, you know, Chuck, in our lifetimes, Louisville played at the fairgrounds, you know, in an old minor league baseball stadium.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about. And so to go from that to drawing 60,000 in a really nice stadium and the men's basketball team drawing 6,000-7,000 people to games, yeah, it's a lot of cognitive dissonance here. And there's a lot of hope that Pat Kelsey's going to help turn some of that around. I have to say, he's been a he's been a real pleasant surprise to folks, I think, with his energy level and his passion for the job. And it was a sorely needed shot in the arm after the debacle that was 2 years of Kenny Payne.
Brother, I always appreciate the insight. It's very unvarnished, and I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Anytime, bud.
All right, man. Straight from the downtown Louisville, 93.9 The Ville. It is Mark Ennis's afternoon drive out there. And when you're talking about a national championship program, Louisville, I want to say is, maybe was, a blue blood in college. Like, if you would have said 5 years ago, any time up to like 50 years ago, you know, best heritage programs, not teams, heritage programs. I go back before 1980, you wouldn't have said Duke. You would have said Louisville. After 1980, you would have also said Duke and Louisville, UCLA, and you know all of those. That's not what it is. And that is identity confusion for a college sports fan, and there's a lot of that going around. That the Kentucky basketball coach shouldn't have said it, but he was right. We're a basketball school. And Mark Stoops actually has a disappointing season, but outlasts the guy. And now you're looking at Kentucky going, what are you? Auburn, football, are they a football school? Of course they're a football school, a great program. What are they right now? They're one of the best basketball programs in America. And like Bruce Pearl, been there a minute. He's comfortable. He likes it. So it's a decade now. There's 11 years maybe or 10. So like, there's all kinds of confusion, and Louisville's absolutely one of those. So like I said, appreciate they've got a Friday night thing going on, and then they're done, and some on Saturday, and they've already got – we talked about this scenario that teams who had its spring game – like if Louisville would have just had its spring game this past Saturday, had it Sunday, had it Monday morning – if you would have had your spring game at any point before the portal, Penny Boone may have said, wait a minute, I wasn't so jazzed all spring, but then the game came around and I got 14 carries and 2 catches, and they even let me play on special teams. Now, maybe I am happy. Like, you missed an opportunity. We talked about the scenario where there would be a program that would have 2, 3, 4 practices remaining, and you'd have kids, yeah, rest of the practice, I'm not really here for it. Why? Because I'm in the portal. And that's happening. Absolutely. So I promise you, and it was supposed to be the belief or the thought from last year, May 1st through the 15th, and that had originally been announced, and it wasn't so far out. Nobody got caught blindsided by it, but it was what it was last year, and it was the originally announced window again this year, and the NCAA is like, yeah, we're actually going to move it forward 2 weeks, and there were reasons. But they did, and some schools didn't adjust or didn't think about it or didn't care or didn't think it's a big deal, and it absolutely was. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
He wasn't kidding. Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. We just were talking on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Our good friend Mark Ennis. And you get Mark Ennis, if you're in Louisville, you can listen to him every single day on 93.9 The Ville. He's afternoon drive there. He wasn't kidding when he said Louisville used to play at the fairgrounds in our lifetimes. And I hadn't thought about it in a minute, but I kind of laughed a little bit because one of the first college football games that I got to see that wasn't on a major network, there were occasionally syndicated games. There were a few companies that would like broadcast like a showcase game sometimes. But for the most part, you would get wherever you lived, you would get one game early, one game late. You'd get those two. You'd have two on a Saturday, guaranteed two. Write it down. You'd have two choices. Sometimes, on a special day, you'd have a third, and that'd be your college football choices. And then in the early 80s, folks like Ted Turner, for instance, says, I got satellites. I do other sports. How about college football? And then Oklahoma and Georgia sued the NCAA, and then stuff started happening. Well, one of the first college football games that I watched outside of like main networks or bowl games was Louisville, who at that time, I want to say, they were probably independent. They were Metro Conference. I don't even know if the Metro Conference still exists, but in basketball, they were in the Metro Conference. Chuck, what's that? Metro Conference was pretty good in basketball. And I want to say the Metro was Louisville, who was national champions at times. Maybe it was DePaul, Tulane. It was not bad basketball. But in football, they were an independent for a while. And so their games were their games. And that was kind of the point of the whole lawsuit was, wait a minute, there's folks who would like to consume this. All we're saying is let us. And so independent sort of places, and then Ted Turner, who had already had the Superstation, said, well, all right, we'll televise when, you know, there's no contention there. And Louisville's like, yeah, we're an independent. Come do our games. And so there were a couple of Louisville games that were on WTBS 80, 81, 82. It'd be at the fairgrounds. They would play at Florida State and have, I don't know, like 60,000 people there. And then they would come home and have a home game and be like 22,000 because they were at the fairgrounds. So Mark wasn't making that up, folks. It just wasn't a thing. Louisville football especially is just kind of what we did until basketball season arrived. Chuck Oliver Show continues on this Wednesday. One of every season's biggest games, and it is, but one of every season's biggest games is now being labeled incorrectly. ESPN.com, and I'm not going to violate my own rule because I've said for years, and the example I saw that inspired this was Pat Forty said that's not a topic. So Texas is the topic here. But there have been a lot of versions of this, and it was Dave Wilson at ESPN.com. He was talking about his words were season-defining game. What is the season-defining game for either the top 25 or these programs or whatever? And Texas was one of them. Well, I had seen this a couple of times, and we'd even maybe we were talking about Anwar earlier before spring practice when the schedules are being announced and permanent opponents and who you're going to play every year. At ESPN.com today, Dave Wilson writes, the way he phrases it is, what game on Texas's schedule is the season-defining game? I have also seen it presented in other places, so I'm just using that as an example. Which of the 12 opponents Texas scheduled to play, I've seen it called the measuring stick game for instance, 2024 for the Horns. Here is the truth. Whether it's the measuring stick, the season defining, the biggest game, where we'll find out the most, what is reflective of what Steve Sarkisian has this year, call it whatever you want. Here's the truth. The marquee game on the Texas schedule is always Oklahoma. It's one of the most watched games of the college season every year. And most seasons, it has impacted the conference race for both teams, and some years a national picture. None of that is true today, at least for right now, for this coming season. Do you realize, go bring up Texas's schedule if you would. Do you realize that all, like I said, it's not just ESPN, I'm not calling anybody out, it's just an opinion. But any labeling of Texas and Oklahoma, the game in Dallas, the state fair, Heath is efforting and making progress to have us actually broadcast there. That's how big it is. That's awesome. Any characterization that Texas OU is the season-defining game, the measuring stick game, game where we'll find out how ready they are for the SEC. Folks, OU is literally the only game on Texas's schedule that I think isn't a measuring stick game. I think OU is the only game you can't pick for that because they play them every year. And you're not measuring Texas against OU. You already know where that sits. You're not measuring Texas against maybe the second best team in our conference, the Big 12, because you're not in the Big 12. OU is literally the only team you can't pick for this. We already know what Texas and Oklahoma do versus each other versus the Big 12 rosters on a regular evaluative basis. Texas-Georgia? Okay, I don't know that. Texas-UF? We're all about the Longhorns. They got the conference. They couldn't even take care of the Gators. How about Texas and Texas A&M? Again, at least there's an actual, hey, what level? What level? Where is A&M after 12 years in the SEC? Now that we play them again after having not for more than a decade, this is a measuring stick game. How much separation in the past 12 years has there been? Folks, week two. Do you know where they are week two? Ann Arbor. Anything, honestly, other than the game against the team you have played 119 times, including every year since 1929. Heath, how's your Wednesday?
Well, Chuck, a couple of things. Have you seen the list of the teams for the proposed Super League? That proposal seems to have gone down in flames. But did you see the divisions
that they
came up with?
It's wide ranging. I don't know what the requirements would be because there were some programs caught my eye. Vanderbilt, I believe, Syracuse.
Yeah, they were trying to keep everybody from a power league in this thing because they figured if you're pushing people out of power leagues, then you'll get too much pushback. But the divisions, I mean, the idea that this had any hope at all is zero, 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 zero. You've got a situation where the South Division would turn out to be Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Kentucky, LSU, the two Mississippi schools, and Tennessee and Vanderbilt. And then the Southeast Division would be Clemson, Duke, Florida, Florida State, Miami, NC State, UNC, South Carolina, UCF, and Wake Forest.
I want to be in that conference instead.
But I mean,
can Auburn be in that division?
You think, though, that Florida people would be like, sure, we don't care about any ties to anybody from the SEC other than South Carolina. We don't really like playing those teams anyway. Like, whoever put this thing together, and we know who put it together, a bunch of TV executives, and then they got Gordon Gee of West Virginia to sign
on. I saw that, and I knew where it was going.
As soon as Gordon Gee is involved with anything, assume it's a bad idea. Just go the other way. His track record speaks for itself on a lot of things. But this list of things as a TV product, we might get a Super League one day, Chuck, but if they ever have one, I sure hope they let people who actually know something about football put it together, because this proposal is super duper dumb.
Yeah, it was curious on a lot of levels. And I mean, like, as I started seeing the unfolded, I heard the Challenger and Super and either 40 or 80 or whatever it's going to be. And then they said 80. But I started looking at the first alleged, proposed, imagined, conceived details. And I was like, yeah, none of this is going to work. And when I could say, I saw Gordon Yee, I was like, okay, I'm skeptical. And then I saw the names themselves, like, no.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All we all here talk college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And we're going to talk spring game, and we're going to talk what's ahead for the national champs from last year. We all watched Jim Harbaugh leave, and like, we expected that to happen, and now what the NCAA's done, like, yeah, he ain't going back to college. He was never going back anyway. And we've talked about some of their players who are leaving for the NFL as well. Like JJ McCarthy, there's no more, like, and I'm gonna ask our next guest, we're gonna start with JJ McCarthy, but like Roman Wilson, gimme. Blake Corum, gimme. Do you know how many touchdowns that kid had last year? He had 27 touchdowns. James Turner's the kicker. He was supposed to lead the team in scoring. He wasn't close. Like, that, he's going to get drafted, maybe. They may have like 15 kids get drafted. So it's not just Jim Harbaugh and a couple at the top, folks. There's a lot of moving pieces in Ann Arbor. I want to welcome on right now senior editor, Mazin Blue Review. It's Trevor McHugh. Trevor, welcome back, friend. How you been?
Good, Chuck. Good to be on with you.
Appreciate your time today. If I could get two guys I want to get an opinion on. J.J. McCarthy, there are NFL fans who can't wait. Maybe our team will trade up to 5 or 6 or somewhere and get J.J. McCarthy. There are fans saying run the other way. Is that same difference of opinion swirling around J.J. McCarthy in Ann Arbor?
Not in Ann Arbor. J.J. McCarthy is arguably one of the most beloved players in Michigan football history. Jim Harbaugh called him the greatest college quarterback to play at Michigan in history. So, you know, his personality, his character, his leadership, just who he is as a person off the field, and then obviously his success, on the field. J.J. McCarthy is very loved in Ann Arbor, and folks are pretty excited to see him go arguably in the top 5.
Roman Wilson, because I'm a huge fan of his and what he can be. I'm a big fan of like 4-3, whatever, and he can catch the ball. What do you think he's going to be on Sundays?
He is speedy. They call him the flying Hawaiian. His 40 time was actually less than people expected. He's broken 4-3 in practices and different drills at Michigan before. So he's a guy that, whether it's coming across the middle or, you know, getting deep, Michigan didn't do it a lot, obviously, and that's something every offensive player in this NFL draft for Michigan is having to deal with is, you know, they didn't really have the opportunity to show all their skills. But he's a guy that can get deep. He's a guy that can block. He's a great teammate. He's going to do what it takes to win. And, again, just that character and culture seems to be winning over, you know, some of these NFL executives. I don't think he's going to crack into the first round, but it might be close. A team like the Chiefs loves guys like him.
All right, well, let's talk about who's still there. And there are still some coaches there. There are still plenty of players, but a lot of new faces. Talk who the new quarterback will be, you believe. Also talk about the new direction of the offense, if it is a new direction. There's just a lot of stuff to replace.
Yeah, for quarterback, I'm going to give you to be determined. The only guy on roster right now that coaches really seem to be pushing and what we're hearing behind the scenes has been Alex Orji. He's a guy that got on the field last year. You saw him in the Big Ten Championship and against Alabama and the Rose Bowl and the National Championship getting some carries. They trust him in big moments, but we haven't seen him throw the ball. And that's a big question mark. Word out of camp is he's had good days, he's had bad days. Some of it gets chalked up to this really good defense. Some of it gets chalked up to maybe he has some accuracy issues. So 5 guys were competing going into spring camp. There isn't this vibe of anyone, Orji especially, you know, taking the job, taking the mantle, so to speak. I think with this transfer portal window becoming open, it's going to be interesting to see what Michigan does. If there is a player with experience or a starter caliber player, does Michigan go out and try to bring more competition into the room? There's going to be a drop-off from J.J., there's no doubt about it. Yeah. But this offense thrives on not turning the ball over and staying on schedule, and I don't know that they think they have that guy yet.
Yeah, anybody who watched a game where Orji stepped on the field, you noticed him. I mean, you couldn't help it. Is there a different chapter of the playbook if he's the QB, or we have one offense and we're going to run it? Because he's intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, the key to the offense isn't going to change, and that's running the football and relying on the offensive line, right? Sharon Moore was a huge part of the success of the last 3 years with what he's done with the offensive line. His term has been smash since before he was hired, and especially since he's been hired as the head coach. So running the ball is going to be key. Does Orji add a new element to that? You think so. He's a linebacker back there. 6'2", 235 pounds. Dudes just bounce off of him. Like you said, you've seen it. You'd think some RPO where he's running the ball a little bit more, or, you know, different options with Donovan Edwards back there would come into play, especially if they have concerns about him throwing the ball. J.J., they kind of kept in the bubble, you know, a lot last year and really didn't let him show off his running skills. So you would think that would be part of it. But at the end of the day, this offense isn't going to change much. They're going to run the ball. They're going to throw the ball short and try and run down the clock.
Okay, if what I have seen is true, it's not just they lost all of the starting offensive linemen. They lost all of the starters plus another one. So there were questions going into spring. This is the head coach's baby. What's the thought now as they're exiting spring?
Yeah, 6 offensive linemen all could potentially be drafted as well. It's pretty remarkable and unheard of. It's nuts, yeah. So coming into the year, you think, okay, all new starters, this is going to be a young group, but it's not going to be young because as Michigan has recruited the position well and brought in transfers, nobody's really left. So who's battling now are guys that have been in the program and been starter caliber for the last 3 years. We've heard Greg Crippen, Giovanni El Hadi, for instance, are two guys that probably could have started on 98% of college football teams last year. So they're coming in, they're talented. It's a lack of experience. So they did bring in Josh Preeb from Northwestern. He's a guard who's played for a couple of years. He brings in some starting experience. Miles Hinton, who started the year last year at right tackle, looked a little rough, got injured, looks better at the end of the year. He's probably going to be the left tackle. And then you've got a guy named Andrew Gentry, who's a former top 100 recruit. He's 23 years old, spent 2 years on a mission trip, then back in Ann Arbor for 3 years. So you're going to have all new starters, not a ton of experience, but they're all seniors, fifth-year players. They've got the talent. Can they be cohesive, and can they overcome the experience gap? That's the big question.
So last thing I want to ask you about is just the overall – and, fans – I mean, my gosh, the fans in Knoxville painted a rock about Greg Schiano. I mean, so fans do whatever they do. What was the general feel closer with the fan base there? Because nationally, there was so much turnover with the Michigan coaching staff. It all just kind of got washed together. What was the feel about Wink Martindale being brought in as the DC, and has that sort of evolved over the last month or so?
Yeah, I think initially people felt like, you know, the Ravens connection was obvious.
Yeah.
But there's also this sense that, hey, they let go of Wink and then Mike McDonald, Jesse Minter. That was when the defense at Baltimore improved. So people were kind of concerned about that. And then obviously his tenure with the Giants, granted, he wasn't necessarily let go because of football issues, but, you know, it didn't go as well as the time as Baltimore, right? He's come in and he's just a charismatic dude. He's won over this fan base immediately. The players obviously love him as well and his mentality. He says he's the OG of this defense. So I think that was probably the first quote he put out that really got people buying in. And at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's the defense is largely going to be the same. Some terminology changes. He does prefer to blitz a little bit more than Jesse Minter did. But the vibe that Wink brings in, his character, and then again, just the defensive scheme that these Michigan fans have loved so much seems like it's going to be the same, maybe a little bit different, but they're going to just continue to adapt to the strength of the team.
Okay, so at least one angle, the impermissible contact COVID stuff, did that get much of a rise around? Because, I mean, when you tell a program like Michigan, you have to pay a fine, they're like, yeah, okay. There were some other things and show calls, but like I said, the show calls won't matter, not to at least Harbaugh. What was the reaction about this part of it at least closing?
Yeah, it depends. So a lot of Michigan fans have had to deal with rival fans telling them, you know, the hammer's coming and this punishment is going to be crazy severe. And we kind of knew it wasn't, largely because Michigan self-imposed so many penalties at the start of last year. The recruiting restrictions are pretty much already done. That was, Michigan didn't allow visitors during the part of the year, and some things around signing day that they did. The show cause, either, like you said, those are guys that aren't coming back to college anyway, or they're, you know, coaches that are still on staff, they're going to have to send a letter to the NCAA in 6 months or whatever to say, hey, we're not breaking any rules. I think it feels good to be over. There is still a little bit of a fragment in the fan base between the athletic department, Harbaugh, and this was kind of chucking Harbaugh under the bus because he didn't want to take part in this settlement, and there will be more on him later. You know, you could argue the NCAA always wanted Harbaugh, and that's what this is going to end with. But it just feels like Michigan's glad to have it over with. It's done, and they're ready to move forward. And then, yeah, Jim Harbaugh's, if he was, he was never coming back to college anyway, but the NCAA is going to make sure that they put out a final statement to embarrass him a little, and probably enough show cause to make sure he doesn't have a path back.
All right, last thing, and I hate even doing this because I'm such a big fan of this guy, but then also this, I hate these situations. You know, Vince Young at Texas with how that has played out. Denard Robinson, Greg Scruggs had to quit after he got his OWI. I believe it was the same charge. What's ahead for Denard Robinson? Because he's on the staff there, and he's been suspended now.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation, but this isn't just a Michigan staffer. It's a Michigan football legend. So you said you bring up Vince Young. I think that's probably a fair comparison. Right now he's suspended indefinitely, which is usually code for we're going to make sure we have all the details before we move forward. It's hard to imagine he would come back, like you said, given what happened with Scruggs and just the overall situation. It's not okay, right? You know, we're lucky in Scruggs' case and Denard that nobody was seriously injured. But this was 3 a.m. on Monday morning, meaning he had to be at work in 4 hours too, right? This isn't just, hey, you should have called an Uber.
Oh,
this
bad is, judgment. Where absolutely. That, yeah.
Right. Where are your priorities at? Scruggs is a similar situation. First day of spring camp, you know, so I don't know what Denard's path is back. Obviously, if this is a situation where he needs help, I hope he gets it. Everybody's going to root for him. I don't see a situation, especially at Michigan, where you talk about being leaders and best, where you can have someone leading young men with that kind of issue. And then obviously the question comes up, hey, Michigan, there's been a pattern of these here. You know, what are you going to do? Obviously, individuals make mistakes, but at some point, the question's got to be asked. Hey, guys, why are we continuing to find ourselves in this kind of trouble? But, yeah, for Denard, it's sad. You know, shoelace and the legend he was during, frankly, a dark time in Michigan football. Denard was the bright spot. So fans will root for him. But, it's hard to imagine right now a path where he comes back. But, obviously, whatever happens moving forward, hope he finds help and hope he's okay.
Trevor, great stuff, man. I appreciate the insight. Thank you.
Always, Chuck. Thanks.
Senior editor, Mason Blue Review. So you just went on record. Greg Scruggs, and when the story about Scruggs came out, and it's what Trevor and I were, you know, kind of led to there. The story about Scruggs came out. I said, do we realize that, like, this just happened, this arrest happened a few hours ago. Michigan starts spring practice this afternoon, and they're not 100% sure who's going to coach defensive linemen at practice today. That's not a Michigan Wolverines football practice thing. All right, that's a semi-pro team, or that's a youth league where dad had to stay late because it's the end of the month and inventory, so we don't have a coach. That's not Michigan. And so it, because partly 2024, partly because, as Trevor said, this is not just a throwaway thing. Thankfully, no one was hurt. It's recoverable, but Michigan decided, they just decided a few weeks ago on record, this is so not okay that you can work somewhere, just can't work here. Then this happens. I want to say that there was a defensive lineman at Georgia who had gotten dismissed, and he had some sort of domestic violence issue, I believe. So he goes to Alabama, and there's an accusation. And on a Monday, I think it was a Monday, Nick Saban gets behind the microphone and he starts talking about, look, everybody screws up about what you do with second chances. Now, if you screw up your second chance, we're going to have an issue. Well, it turns out that like a day or two later, I don't want to sign the wrong kid. There was a defensive back who had already been suspended for a problem with, you know, alcohol and driving. Right after getting behind the microphone and saying, it's about what you do with your second chance, and if you don't learn anything and you make the same mistakes, well, then one of his leaders made the exact same mistake he had made earlier. And then Saban, he did what his coach is supposed to. He said pivoted. He's like, look, he's done everything he was supposed to do between that first one and this next one. He's done on the, and it would be so unfair to his teammates. I think I know who that is, but if I was mistaken, I wouldn't want to lay it on the incorrect individual. But like when you just go public and then this happens right after it, this was one of Saban's favorite players, upperclassman, smart guy. And then he did something that was all of the opposite of that. Denard Robinson, that's not a normal sort of like Michigan legend. That's next level sort of stuff. I hope that, you know, we talked about when it was either Devin Gardner or maybe it was Denard. One of them had to wear 98 one night, and it was Tom Harmon, and he won the Heisman back in, I don't know, like the late 40s. And there was a chance they didn't really know who Tom Harmon was. Everybody, because it was so, like, Denard Robinson, folks, he's as high-profile a guy as they've had. Everybody loved him. And he was actually a new position in the NFL. He was an OW. He was an offensive weapon on the Jacksonville Jaguars depth chart. And so this is where the public declaration they just made. And so this is going to be a real tough outcome, it seems, for Denard. Hopefully there'll be a path back. But as Michigan just said, maybe it'll be somewhere else. At least that's what they did with Scruggs. All right, we break and we wrap up next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
We've got a ton of new faces in that receiver room and in the tight end room. So it's been a little bit of a work in progress of getting that rapport right. Guys are working hard, and we're trying to get all that done. But I thought Quinn played at a really high level. And then, as you know, like, we're extremely fortunate to have Arch with us too.
Steve Sarkisian, head coach of Texas. Is there a pipeline? Is there a pipeline from Tuscaloosa to Austin? They've gotten a player or two. Steve Sarkisian, ahead of Saturday's annual Orange-White Spring game at DKR. Heath, you ever been to Darrell Royal?
I have.
That's a impressive, old, I say old school, like old looking building. And it's giant and straight up, and it's just an impressive thing right there beside the interstate. And it's going to be an entire new frontier for them beginning when SEC play starts. But he was talking about the receivers in particular, and they lost this guy to the NFL and then this other guy and then probably these two other guys if you want to include the tight end. So it's three receivers and probably the tight end, I want to say four. But it is Isaiah Bond. It is Amari Nyblack. And he was talking about there, they've got enough bodies, though, and this is what he was referring to in his comments about, hey, we've looked at all these guys we have here now. Past couple of springs, it's been iffy on what they could actually do on a Saturday and call it a spring game because of depth, bodies, lack of at particular positions, specifically line. And they look at all these spots now, and he's like, whoa, wait a minute. And he said it caught his attention. He's like, wait a minute, we have depth everywhere. So they've done a good job, and include, we didn't even talk about, they may have, because of a transfer, because of a couple of guys coming back, one of the best secondaries in America as well. So Sark's got depth to the point where previously at Texas he was saying, all right, how are we going to be able to work this so we can have a spring game where it kind of functions like a spring game, to now he's able to kind of pick some guys to hold out of the spring game. Heath, what's up?
You know, we're obviously still keeping an eye on what's going on with regards to the portal and who's in, who's out, everything else. It is remarkable how many guys there are, Chuck, now that are literally the worst-case scenario people talked about, this idea that guys would be changing schools like they're changing their underwear, basically. Texas A&M offensive lineman Derek Graham is back into the portal. He was there for a semester. Started for Troy in 2023 on 523 pass-blocking snaps, only allowed three sacks, so seemed like a decent pickup, starting offensive lineman. And now he's in the portal. So I don't know if he didn't like what he heard at A&M or maybe College Station's not for him or whatever, but he's on the move. Meanwhile, you got UCF. Wide receiver Goldie Lawrence transferred to UCF from FSU. He is in the portal. That will make it three schools in three semesters for him. Again, some of these kids, you just hope that they're getting advice from somebody somewhere that has some idea what's going on, because three schools in three semesters is not good. Forget about if you're an athlete. Three schools in three semesters is not good from just any standpoint of trying to make any progress at all academically, socially, anything. It's just not good. And I'm sorry, but if you're good enough to get to FSU and UCF, then you could probably, if you're just patient enough, build something there, but it's not going to always happen in 10 practices. I hope these kids are getting better advice than it looks like some of them are.
You know, I mentioned something, I think it was yesterday or maybe, Monday, I was talking about guys that I've known and other examples I've known of guys who, for a better way to put it, have, you know, he stumbled into a degree just because rules were in place, and when you transfer, you lose credits. Well, if you're not transferring, you're not losing as many credits, which means by just hanging around and trying to rise the depth chart, hey, look, I got a degree. Like, you saw that happen. You were in Gainesville and Columbia for more than 20 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It absolutely does happen. And there are things, as somebody who once upon a time transferred from Mercer to the University of Florida, there's credits at one school that don't work at another. And so yes, you do pay a price for it, even if you are just a regular student. Also, by the way, Mack Brown, let it be known today, he made a deal with the ACC Network not to televise the spring game and instead just come to a practice because UNC has made a lot of changes defensively and has a true quarterback battle going on and didn't want it on TV. give Mac credit, because a lot of coaches want to do that. It seems like Mac just found a way to get it done.
Yeah, he pushed the Mac button. I'm Mac Brown. Yeah. Did you call in a favor? No, I just called ESPN. I'm Mac Brown. I used to work there. Wraps it up on a Wednesday. David spending his gold. He Rolodex to the stars. All the guests, everybody listening, me, we'll all be back tomorrow in just 22 hours talking college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.